Good morning, everyone. We are broadcasting live from CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Hannah.
And you're listening to Film Picnic. Today, we have gathered together to record our show on the unceded and ancestral territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. These areas continue to be homelands to the indigenous peoples from which they were stolen.
It is with immense privilege that we talk into these microphones and share our stories, as stories have been shared for generations before us on this land. We hope that Film Picnic can be a space for shared accountability, knowledge sharing, and reconciliation. This always was and always will be Indigenous land.
A beautiful sentiment to begin. For those who are new to the show, perhaps tuning in for the first time, here on Film Picnic, our mission is to pick a specific topic a week relating to the film industry and debunk it. This means digging into it, doing research, figuring out how it realistically operates, how it contributes to the production of motion pictures, and then synthesizing all that information right here in a convenient little hour-long episode to share with all of you. Everyone out there listening, if you can hear us, we invite you to come along with us behind the scenes.
Yes, and to enrich our programming, every other week we bring an industry guest to provide their knowledge firsthand. This week, we continue our exploration into film festivals with a guest that we are so excited to introduce, a published author and playwright who is also deeply involved in Vancouver's Asian Canadian arts community. This self-described content sifu has amassed a very impressive resume over the past 20 years of experience spanning across multiple media industries. For the past 2 years, she has held the illustrious title of Executive Director of Vancouver's very special Crazy Eights Film Festival. Grace Chin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yay, Grace.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so excited. I know Hannah and I have both... We've both had personal experiences with Crazy Eights, so this is so exciting for both of us.
Yes, last year I had the pleasure of producing one of the Crazy Eights films, DTF, which was such an awesome experience. I was so honored and excited to be a part of that.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to just attend as a guest for 2 years, which coincidentally graduated high school during COVID, and then I was able to attend, and the gala ended up being like our prom.
Oh, really?
We like found big dresses to wear, and we like made the Crazy Eights gala our prom, which was really special and really cute.
That is so fun.
So that was just, yeah, we're so excited to have you here, Grace, and thank you so much for sharing your time with us this morning.
Just to begin with the basics, for our audience members who are maybe not part of Vancouver or not familiar with Crazy Eights, could you please explain what the process is and what Crazy Eights is as a festival?
Sure. Crazy Eights is a filmmaking program. Mm-hmm. It's run by the Crazy Eights Film Society, which is a registered BC nonprofit. Mm-hmm. It was founded in 1999, became a not-for-profit in 2008, mm-hmm. I want to say. So it was founded by local members of the Directors Guild of Canada.
Yes.
And since then, we've just been producing films every year. We just passed our 25th year, which was a milestone for the program and for the community here in BC, the filmmaking community. So in terms of what it is, it's a externally juried filmmaking program. So every year, out of over 100 projects that apply, through a three-step selection process, six films eventually get made.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And it is called Crazy Eights because
the name has meaning.
Oh, yes.
The name has meaning. So originally, Crazy Eights stood for 8 days, $800. And 800 feet of film. They used to shoot on film.
I didn't know the 800 feet of film.
They so this was in 1999.
Wow. Yeah. And if you talk to people did it back in the days, it is difficult because if you think about it, so 800 feet of film, it approximates to about 8 minutes on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But your shooting ratio has to be, sorry, by that I mean...
like how much you're shooting versus how much actually gets in
that's
to
correct.
The final product.
That's correct. Yeah. So you have to be quite conservative. So in these days of digital, sometimes it's hard for people to remember or to understand what it used to be like when you were actually shooting on physical media that was finite, very finite.
You couldn't just do, oh, we're reshooting that. We're going to do that take again. Yes. You could, but to a degree.
To a degree. Yeah. And sometimes if you didn't have the money, you know, to get more film mm-hmm. to even shoot with, mm-hmm. then you were kind of SOL if
yeah.
there weren't any good, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So back then, you know, and now
yeah.
Editors can save your film.
Yeah.
Yes they can.
Save your behind.
Yes, save all the things.
Save, yes.
Yeah, so back then that was what the situation was.
Yeah.
So the reality is that we would still support and fund 8 films if we could, mm-hmm. but as costs have gone up. So yeah, so now
it's 6 films.
Now it's 6 films every year. Now it's infinite in terms of the number of tapes that you can shoot on.
Yeah.
With the caveat that you just have
have 3 days to shoot.
Yeah, and 5 days for post.
Yes.
So that's where it's still crazy.
Which, yeah. for those of you who
crazy
maybe are
not...
Crazy
is also in the name.
Crazy is also in the name. But that is a very short turnaround. And
extremely short.
But again, at the gala, I was so impressed to see the quality of the films that come out. Even if it's... Even only being shot within 3 days, edited within 5, I'm like... I was so impressed.
Thank you for saying that. Like a big part of it is sharing the content with the community.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. I'm a firm believer in art needing to be shared
mm-hmm.
and communicated
mm-hmm.
for it to have the full extent of the meaning that it needs to have.
Yes,
as an artistic product,
yes.
as a creative product. So it really means a lot to us when people feel that they can connect with the films.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say, too, I just think it's so impressive, at least, you know, the films that I've been lucky enough to see. I mean, short film writing as a concept in itself, it's like you have to pack such a punch in such a short amount of time. And I think it's just it's so incredible to, like, see what the filmmakers are able to achieve in that short amount of time, like, let alone the production conditions. But, you know, establishing a character, introducing a character, establishing them. Creating some kind of emotional connection with them, having something happen to them in that amount of time. And they're telling queer stories, they're telling stories from diverse perspectives, you know, sharing a little slice of their lives and something with the audience. And I feel like there's always so many, there's such varied perspectives and interesting kind of viewpoints, you know. And I remember one specifically that I was able to see was talking about maternity and using the analogy of fertility with having green thumbs and gardening. And I was just like, that is just the most original idea. I don't know. I'm blown away. I'm blown away by it, truly.
On a similar note, I'm curious, in a general sense, what your role is as an executive director of a festival like this. If you could give us a little bit.
I definitely could. The role is twofold. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, this role also runs the not-for-profit.
Yeah.
Because Crazy Eats is a film society, like it is a not-for-profit.
It's not just
the
festival.
It's not just the festival or the filmmaking program.
Yeah.
So as a not-for-profit, there are certain things that need to happen
mm-hmm.
because we're registered in BC, you know, you need to have your AGM, you need to have, so there's paperwork, there's, things like that. There's financials, things like that, all of that.
Businesswoman.
in that sense, but coupled with you have to also fulfill the not-for-profit requirements.
Yes.
So it's not just regular corporate requirements that you would, like if you were producing a film.
Yeah.
You also have to fulfill certain government regulations or, you know, requirements so that you can continue to run as a not-for-profit.
Mm-hmm.
There's more that goes into it, but I'm not going to talk about that.
In the general sense, yes.
In the general sense. And then on the other hand as well, this role serves as an executive producer
mm-hmm.
on all of the films that are that we produce every year.
So cool.
So we produce... It's a job, you know.
Yeah.
Like I mean, the EP role like could be considered a you know a vanity fluff role on some
depends
shows.
On the project, yeah.
Depending on the project, you know, like but especially for indie,
mm-hmm.
production and for not for profit. The EP role has to pull its weight.
I can imagine.
All hands on deck.
To be so involved.
All the hands are on deck.
All
and
hands.
So, you know, like I would therefore be involved with not only overseeing the entire program as it runs, but also in making certain key decisions.
Yeah.
Like assembling the jury, you know, like, you know, sourcing mentors. Mm-hmm. And very importantly, sourcing and confirming sponsors every year, cash-wise, and also in maintaining and soliciting, you know, like in-kind partnerships.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the key things about Crazy Eight. You know, there are some people that are like, oh, yeah, I can make a film in 8 days. And I'm like, it's true. It's true.
It's possible. But at what quality?
And that's the thing. I think sometimes people, before they go into the program, they don't realize that what we're trying to achieve is an aspirational program.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of not just the films themselves, in terms of the quality of them, but also in terms of the process.
Yeah.
So there's a very truncated pre-production period from about mid-January to early March when they actually go to camera. And it's truncated because we actually do everything by the book. So all of the productions are contracted under the UBCP, the acting unions, like ultra low budget program.
It's all very like,
we everyone gets a deal memo, so we're
insurance, all of those kinds of things.
Exactly. Yeah. So as a producer, if you're producing one of these things, then you know it's not just you're not just going out there doing guerrilla stuff,
right?
You know, you have to get permits.
Yeah,
you got to get signatures.
Yes,
you got to chase people down.
All of that stuff. You know, so behind every team, each of these six films is a Crazy Eights team.
Yeah.
And it's like every year there's about 20 people.
Yep.
Yeah. And just the core production team, there's a line producer, two PMs to oversee all of these.
Yep.
There's myself. There's a separate vendor manager and vendor coordinator. There's a separate post-production manager and post-supervisor.
Yep.
To oversee, you know, like each team's editing teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the list goes on.
And the list the list goes on, so I'm not going to get totally into it. But
I really appreciated I thought the mentor aspect of the festival, the program, was so special. Our mentor was Amanda Verhagen. And she was the producer of the first film I ever acted in. And so I kind of
Circle.
It was such a full circle moment. And I felt so comfortable going to her and asking her questions. And she was so, so helpful and supportive. And me and Aaron, who were both producing, we learned so much from Amanda, and that support was so helpful in just, you know, if we didn't know something, we were able to be like, can you help us with this? And and she would, and we felt really held by that. So that was wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you for that feedback.
Of course.
This is really something that we're trying to expand.
Yeah.
Mentorships and including in other areas as well. Like we had a production design mentor for the first time last year. Yeah, and this year we were able to find someone to agree to be a locations mentor. Yeah, like these
very
are
very helpful.
It's so helpful. And personally, I've continued that relationship beyond Crazy Eights, and I'm not saying bug your mentors all the time, but it is
maybe a little bit.
But you know, it's just something that I personally took away from the process. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is something that also I will just say is a personal goal in this role is I would love to be able to not only continue to expand the in-kind support in terms of gear and services, but also the mentorships, but also ultimately the amount of cash that Crazy Eights is able to provide.
Mm.
Before I started in this role, each team received like $1,000. Which, you know, barely enough to...
That doesn't cover a film.
Yeah, even crafty,
yeah,
right?
That feeds people, maybe.
Yeah, it might feed people, maybe.
Yeah.
So since then, we've committed as an organization to $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, it is 100% increase. I mean, it's still not a lot.
But it's still double.
But it's still double. And that's part of an overall package, which, if you think about it, you know, so say maybe you've got... We kick in $2,000, maybe you've got $5,000. Maybe your producers can pull together, you know, enough to make $10,000 cash budget with the in-kind and all the services. The product that you find that you eventually see on screen is probably more like $70,000 or upwards of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to provide people with, that basis of, okay, this is how you do it at a professional level, but this is a safe space. You know,
we're
trying to give you support and the mentorship. you know, you go,
yeah,
we're behind you, you know, like do your best, right?
Yeah. I feel like that energy definitely comes through. I mean, it's even, I mean, going to the screening obviously is like a beautiful, fun experience, and everyone's so psyched to see their films, and you know, the support of your family and community members is great. But even, yeah,
I think also huge,
just so many, so
like,
large.
It's so wide throughout Vancouver. Everybody knows it.
And yeah, I think it is really beautiful to see that just the value of what Crazy Eights is in the support that you're being offered as a filmmaker. And personally, I don't know of any other programs that are providing so much guidance and expertise and just unbridled support when you're when you're the filmmaker.
I will also say, as a UBC film production student, we don't get any, like, we get support from contacting vendors, and we build those relationships ourselves. But when it comes to paying for our films, we don't get any support there. And I feel like it is an unfortunate truth that films cost a lot of money to make. And that's just the reality of the industry. And I think even $2,000, some support, like,
on the independent level, it never feels like enough.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, you got to get creative and you got to get scrappy. And
yeah. But that's part of it as well.
That budget is your Bible. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the festival in just a couple minutes. We just want to dive a little bit more into your career, maybe how you got into the position of executive director. We've done our research. Just in a general sense, forging a career in a film-related field is not a straightforward path all the time.
Everybody has a different journey.
There's a different way in. We're going to backtrack a little bit. We're going back to the school day, back to career, pre-career school days. Grace Chin attended UBC.
Yay!
Like Hannah and I, BA in English Lit and History, followed up by Certificate of Print and Broadcast Journalism from Langara. Classic. There we go. We looked at your LinkedIn. Just a beautiful, vast array of professional experience.
Grace just made a surprised face.
No, but the truth is, Han and I were sitting there and we were like, this is so impressive.
It was very cool to
so
see.
Impressive.
Especially because you didn't go to film school. I'm always curious to see people's different career trajectories.
I was just going to rattle off some of the fields in which you've worked. We've got publishing and printed media, copywriting, theater and film production, content strategizing, marketing, acting, researching, editing, project management, all the likes of those things. The question is where I'm leading. Through such a wide array of professional experience and development, maybe what skills from those experiences are most relevant to what you're doing now?
Okay. I think the answer is twofold.
Okay.
So one of the things I will say is, and I'm just going to throw in some generational stuff. I'm Gen X, which is this like tiny little gen, like squished in between boomer and millennial. Like sometimes people aren't even sure if it exists, but trust me, it did. Yeah. I mean, you know, Ferris Bueller.
Bueller.
That is exactly the tone. You have seen this movie.
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen it many times.
Film studies student over here.
I'm film studies, Hannah's film production. Yeah, it's great.
I am among my people.
Oh, my goodness.
I love. Right?
Yeah.
So I think part of it comes from being Gen X. You can kind of, you sort of went all the way from rotary dial to iPads.
Yeah.
And so you just have the kind of brain that that sees all sides in a way, and that can kind of like easily go from like super low tech whatever to, you know, whatever's happening now. And and similar as well, even in terms of the workplace, you know, like it's not, you know, we don't really have okay boomer mentalities, but we can kind of understand.
Yeah, okay, boomer.
You know, and we're totally not like TikTok. But we can kind of go, yeah, we can kind of understand what that is. So it's part of having that sort of brain.
That
can kind of,
Of versatility.
That kind of like flex brain. So not aflex. Although it could be aflex.
Well, you can flex on it.
Yeah, you can flex on it. It's a flex of some kind, right? You know, hey, we can see all sides, you know, as opposed to, what are you even talking about?
Yeah.
So that's one thing.
Yeah.
And another thing, I think, is also and it also speaks to flexibility, is being able to understand, to see like different levels of a problem or an issue. Because if you have been involved in many different careers simultaneously, then your brain
is just used to
is just used to switching from one mode to another.
So maybe adaptability.
To some degree. So these things I feel are really important, because organizations are not static.
They're all different.
Yeah, they're all different. And also in an organization's life, an organization has to be able to change, to morph, to in order to stay relevant to its community, to the people that it serves, to its own staff, you know, that kind of thing. And so sometimes if an organization doesn't do that, then that's when it just dies, or, you know, people start saying things like, yeah, it used to be cool.
And that's just the worst. That's just the last thing you want.
You know, or it's like, oh, yeah, you know, I used to do that, you know, but, you know, it's pretty useless
we
now.
We don't do that anymore.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. So I'm always very conscious of that need for flexibility, adaptability. So these are all the so-called softer skills, I guess, if you want to say.
Especially when things are changing so much so quickly.
No, totally. But in terms of just the hard skills, I would say just understanding production from different perspectives and at different levels. If you ask me to produce an event, if you ask me to produce like an exhibition event, like a film festival, I have run a film festival.
Vancouver Asian Film Festival for 5 years.
That's
Crazy
correct.
Eights for 2 years now.
And so you can understand on that level. You also understand things like how to program something. Some people aren't necessarily aware of how much thought goes into the order in which films are screened.
We did actually, our second episode is all about programming. There's so much forethought that goes into it, and so much people fighting for their own tastes, and you know, in the programmer's room, but then also in the order that you're seeing the films. So much detail, much time and energy and effort put in there.
No, totally. And so, you know, I'm being able to understand that aspect, being able to understand the aspect of, you know, like what funders are interested in, what they want to see, you know, like negotiating those kinds of partnerships is important. Being able to assemble a team that not only has on paper the skills that are required to run the program, but also that can work with each other.
That is huge.
It's really huge. And I think sometimes people don't think about that enough. They just go, oh yeah, you know, this DP's got a great resume, you know, let's bring him on. And it's like, yeah, but
it's a little more to it than that.
And there might be a little bit more to it than that. I won't get into it. So I don't know if I answered your question.
No, definitely, that's great.
I'm curious, just to expand on that, you have done so much volunteering at the same time as, you know, all of these different positions you've had in your career. And I'm curious to know how you balance doing that at such a large capacity, because the volunteer positions are like major, you know, festival directing and being a founder, being a mentor. That's a lot. And I know also that there's a lot of free labor in the film industry.
I was going to say, let's talk about the free labor.
It's important. And it's very apparent that it comes from your heart with the roles that you've done with volunteering. So yeah, I'm just wondering how you've managed to balance that, how that's been for you.
Okay. Yes.
Big question.
It is a big question, but thank you so much for asking that. Being able to, for lack of a better term, mentor is something really important to me, because when I was coming up in the world, I didn't get it. Or it wasn't as easy to come by. And I'll get into a bit of more of a, well, I'll describe it in binary terms, because back then it was a little more binary. You know, sometimes other women wouldn't want to help you or tell you anything, because, you know,
there's only space for so many.
Yes, there's only space for so many. And sometimes men wouldn't either, because I'm not a man. I'm a she/her, and not a man. So whenever I can, even if it's just a casual, you know, like a, and this is a true story. This actually happened. One of the top six a couple of years ago, I Can't Go On was a film called I Can't Go On, and the filmmaker, the director writer Brenna Goodwin McCabe, I met her at a Rain Dance Vancouver event, and I was just there just to say, hey, you know, submissions are open. You know, come talk to me if you want to know more.
Mm-hmm. And submissions for Crazy Eights.
Yeah, sorry, submissions for Crazy Eights. Yeah. And we chatted for maybe like a good 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, at that point, she had done many other low budget short films.
Right.
But she just had, you know, some questions. Mm-hmm. And so I responded to them and I encouraged her to apply. And she did. She got into top six. It's had a decent festival run.
Yeah.
And she also met her producer at that same Rain Dance event.
Wow. See, listeners.
The power of chatting.
Yes.
You know, I'm not being afraid to just, you know, talk to people.
Yeah.
And also this is in a way what I exist for.
Yeah.
You know, like I love just being able to share my experience, or if you want any information that I may be able to provide, I'm happy to do that insofar as I am able.
Amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So that is a thing for me. So I do. So that was my long answer to the short answer, which is part of the reason I can do it is because I prioritize it. Like I make time to do these things.
Yeah.
And it's something that you consciously do have to do. It's just like saying, you know, yeah, I'm going to get to fixing that tchotchke thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
2 weeks go by, 2 months go by. You know what I mean?
You have to make time for it.
You have to make time for it. So I do consciously make time for it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is time blocking.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I work in time blocks.
That's great.
Yeah. Because I have to.
We're learning.
Yeah, I have to. And it's time blocks that you can kind of drill down. It's like a little kind of nesting box thing where, so on the macro level, you've got, okay, so this is one of my jobs. This is another one of my jobs.
Yeah.
And so on and so on. So time
Here's
blocks
another priority
for
that
those.
I'm gonna put in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then within that, there's also time blocks. So say, for example, you know, for the until 2 p.m., I'm going to focus on Crazy Eights.
Mm-hmm.
From 2 p.m. to about 6 p.m., you know, like, and then I might focus on, you know, something else.
Yeah.
So within that, you know, like, say 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. window, what am I going to do specifically with regards to Crazy Eight?
Yeah.
Okay, so for this hour and a half or 2 hours, you know, like, I'm going to do emails. Because if I don't, like, drill through all my emails now, then... catch up on my inbox, and then after that I have to work on this grant application, and then after that I have to work on, you know, that kind of thing. So this is how I sort of plan out my day, you know?
I'm sure it took some trial and error to get to a place where you kind of know how much time certain things take and how you work best throughout the day.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
That was not an F-bomb. Hell yes. Yeah, hell yeah. I was like,
wait. No, you're good.
I was like, mild swear.
No, you're fine.
No, hell yes. And a big part of it, too, is as you just get, you know, more, as you do a thing more, then you get, in a way, faster at it. And you get faster at being able to even filter and decide. You know, so in the morning, I get up, say, hypothetically, have my... You know, first two of probably four coffees.
I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same way.
You know, you kind of go, okay, so this is what needs to be done this week. How far have I gotten? So I should probably focus on this, you know.
Yeah, this is the priority.
And this, so that's just how I do it.
Yeah.
But the truth is that you also do, it's a bit like, you know, if you're a firefighter, you're 4 days on, 4 days off.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So there are some times, there are some crunch periods where I don't get a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
Like I'll just be real about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there just are. Mm-hmm. And that's true of, I think, many jobs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I just say what I feel like, even just in your answer right now, I'm like, what a producer answer, the way that you're talking about the ideology that's driving your decision, like wanting to open the door for other people and hold that door open, and then exactly how you do it by time blocking. Mm-hmm. I'm marveling at it. That's beautiful. At this point in time, we are going to take a quick little break so we can just play some of our ads and some show promotions. But we will be right back in about 4 minutes. So everybody stay tuned.
Healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year? Then Freshie has you covered. Stop in today at Freshie on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshie on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshie. Eat. Energize.
Knock, knock. Guess who? MRG Live coming right back at you. This time with a whole new list of upcoming live shows by your favorite artists. Hear this. Marika Hackman, Faye Webster, Empress Of, Peter Cat Recording Co., and The Rare Occasions are a few of the artists MRG Live is bringing to you. Follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram to stay tuned with all the artists performing near you.
Looking for an audioscape to put your mind at ease? Landscapes by Dune is a musical journey through sampling and field recording. From the busy streets of Toronto to BC's picturesque landscapes, the Belgian artist recorded an array of sounds during his travels across Canada. Landscapes will be released on Pop Guitari Records Bandcamp on December 8th and will be available on all streaming platforms on December 15th. For more information, check out at Dune as Dune on Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Whoa, hold on. Where are you taking all those cacti?
I need to put them near the radio.
How come?
They love to hear Everly's nature-based music on Dead Succulent Haunt every Thursday at 5 p.m. on CITR 101.9.
Oh, Dead Succulent Haunt? Where your plants can grow and you can mourn those you've lost?
Come on, plants, let's grow.
And we are back. Ladies, gentlemen, anyone else listening in, all you lovely people on your morning commute at 10:30 in the morning. I don't know where you're going. This is Film Picnic with Georgia and Hannah on CITR 101.9 FM. We have with us Grace Chin, Executive Director of Crazy Eights. Thank you for being here, Grace.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think maybe at this point we just want to dive a little more into the semantics of the festival, perhaps?
Because I've had, well, because we would love to hear about it, but also because I've had, since being a part of Crazy Eights, I've had so many people reach out with questions on how to get involved, and we thought this would be a great opportunity for some of those questions to be answered by someone who's not me.
Yeah.
Because I don't have all the answers.
No, we have the expert here with us.
Yes.
I know you kind of touched on this a little bit to some extent, but just maybe for those who have just tuned in, being an executive director, to what extent do you still get to engage with the programming and the filmmaking and the creative side of what's going on? You know, like how much of your job is dealing with the kind of creative aspects or programming, pitching, that kind of part of the festival?
My chief involvement is in organizing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the program, determining the timeline mm-hmm. for it. So just a note for everyone, in general, submissions open for Crazy Eights every year in September.
Yeah.
And they close approximately sometime in October, like towards the mid to end of October. So this year, October 18th.
Okay,
so
in, you guys.
The time is now. The time is now.
Yeah, so it opened September the 9th, I want to say, and then it closed on the 18th. Mm-hmm. And then after that, there's a live pitch process mm-hmm. and then a story development process. And then at the end of that, the six projects are selected.
Right.
And they go into pre-production right away in mid-January. They shoot and edit and deliver in early March. And this year, the gala, the screening at the center for an audience of about 1,700 people, mm-hmm. I want to say it's usually 1,700 people, is going to be March 29th.
Okay.
So that timeline is approximately similar in terms of the interval between each milestone event.
Yeah.
Right.
But the specific dates do have to shift every year mm-hmm. as well. And these are just like the Uber milestones. Like there are other things that happen.
Many,
you know,
many other milestones within the
within that,
process,
you know, so,
of making those films.
Yeah, yeah. So there's workshops that happen on specific dates, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. you know, table reads for your script, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So all of that generally has to be you know,
it's a quick turnaround.
Determined, yeah, it has to be determined by myself. Mm-hmm. So I essentially finalize the timeline for the entire program, and then within that, all of the HODs, the heads of department, you know, so we have a program manager that helps me with administration of the of this huge beast.
Yes,
and then there's an entire mini production team that includes the vendor team.
Yep.
And then there's the post team.
Mm-hmm. Post production, huge part.
There's a post team, and these are just the folks that work with Crazy Eights.
Yeah. Right.
So each project.
They're like overseeing
their own
version.
Yes, exactly. So we oversee the whole thing. Then there's a marketing team.
Yeah.
Including the website, you know, like obviously we have a bookkeeper. Know, we have a graphic design. Yeah, you get it. There's this whole thing. And so that's what this role does. So all of that has to be happening. Mm-hmm. And in terms of, to answer the creative part of it, how involved am I with that? I would say that my main contribution to that process is in determining the jurors.
Mm. Right.
The juries are extremely important. They do come from the industry and our community.
Yep. Which is important. I think having a mixture of different perspectives and not just, you know.
Yes.
Oh, we've talked about diversity on panels.
Yes,
we've talked about diversity in the jurors.
Yes.
Completely agreed. Like, we're definitely on the same page there.
Yeah.
And also considering that some of our sponsors include, you know, Creative BC.
Yeah. And
so mm-hmm. we also have like people from our sponsors. You know, DGC BC, for example, is the presented by sponsor. Yeah. So we do also have like reps from our sponsors that happen to be also from within the industry.
Yeah.
Creative industry.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of folks like that to, you know, people that program for festivals, for example.
Right.
Independent filmmakers. Mm-hmm. You know, like we do try to pick ones that have some level of experience or that have, you know, hardware on their mantelpiece.
To watch,
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also we do select jurors from our alumni. In the first place, it's a little difficult to find anyone that has not been involved in a Crazy Eights production in this town.
Yeah.
Like, it's difficult to find someone that has not at all. But also we believe that perspective is important because they have actually gone through the program. Mm-hmm. They understand what's involved, or at least from their perspective, and so they can bring that to any assessment, I guess. So my main task there is to select the jury, instruct them, basically, is what Crazy Eights is about, you know, like, this is generally what, you know, we would be looking for, but beyond that, you know, we have an info session every year in late September, and we typically have a juror, some jurors attend as well, you know, people that have juried in the past.
An info session for the juries?
An info session for anyone that's interested in the program.
Oh, okay.
And so the reason why I bring it up is because the jurors can then talk about what they look for.
Yeah.
And beyond that, it's really just trusting the process.
Yeah.
As EP, I do have EP power to say yes or no to what the jury selects.
Right.
But I prefer to trust the process.
Yeah.
Once I've selected the people that are supposed to do the job, please do the job.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And I will just say that the one time that I actually did say anything, it was because for the one project, there was an attached producer that I had worked with before. And just based on my experience and of that situation, and also of others that have been in a similar situation with the person, I did raise that as a potential concern, and also in terms of the project itself, what I find the most stimulating and that translates eventually to the final product, is if it's It invites discussion and debate.
Precisely.
So if the entire jury is going, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's good. Okay. Next. If that's the feeling.
It's not.
We want discourse. We want engagement.
Yeah. You know, given all the other givens, you know, maybe let's look at
Yeah.
Some other things. So you know, again, you know, like, definitely not naming any names. That's not the whole point of this.
No.
But just to give you an idea of, like, how involved I am in terms of that.
Well, right. That was a question I was going to have for you as well. Is there a certain type of film that Crazy Eights looks to have? Or are there certain, maybe not necessarily topics, but...
Genres
that you... I don't know, that you've seen the festival lean towards in the past, or perhaps lean away from, or that haven't been seen so much within Crazy Eights?
I definitely don't want to speak for what happened before.
Yeah.
Before I got into this hot seat, you know, like this hot seat position. But
so within the past 2 and a bit years specifically.
Within the past couple of years, and that it's really interesting that you ask this, because that question did come up in our recent info session that we that we just had in September. The short answer is no. Mm-hmm. Our rules are quite clear that it's a scripted narrative program. We don't accept full-on documentary submissions, or full-on music video submissions. But within that, there's a lot of room, like, genre-wise to play. There may be a perception in general that a straight, like, walk and talk, like Before Sunrise, for example, right? Linklater's Before Sunrise may not require the kind of, you know, like, production value or in-kind or anything that Crazy Eights does provide.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if you actually think about it, and I'll just use the example of a commercial. A commercial is 30 seconds. It can cost like millions of dollars.
Yes.
How much thought goes into every aspect of getting that thing, that product produced?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Casting, super important, you know, like messaging, you know, so the script is important, you know, like, you can use some very complicated effects and things for a 30 second thing.
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, you know, if the story is good, mm-hmm. if it's a walk and talk, the jury will...
If it's feasible to produce.
If it's feasible to produce within that time frame.
Yeah.
Even if the walk and talk does include, you know, walking through like an entire field of, you know, pink flamingos. You know, like, yeah, if the team is able to demonstrate to the jury that they have considered this issue.
Yes.
And that they're working with a VFX person, for example, they could say, oh, you know, like, we have a VFX person, a consultant, and we are working, we're thinking about how we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we're potentially going to be able to lock off this field that happens to, you know, be on the property of some guy that the producer knows, you know, like, that we might be able to get it for
the
a deal.
Feasibility is important.
Exactly. Really, really important, right? Yeah. So really, ultimately, what's important is it a good story? Mm. Does the script work?
Yeah.
How solid is the team?
Yeah.
Even in terms of, have they even started thinking about this? Like, we had a puppet movie.
Yes. Which was beautiful. So impressive.
This is what I'm saying. So it's and we had a movie that was shot in an ice rink. So, you know, so Crazy Eights is not afraid to take on, to produce projects that are highly aspirational in these obvious ways. But also, you know, like, we also have, like, you know, dialogue films. Hour Long Goodbye, for example.
Yeah.
It was a film about a person... dealing with the fact that their father has dementia. And so there was nothing particularly complicated technically wise in terms of what the requirements were.
Yeah.
But, you know, does that mean that there are no technical requirements?
Well,
does that mean
I'm
that
pretty
it shouldn't
sure
look beautiful?
They used a, soundstage is not the right word. They used a studio for the car shots and all of that, which was, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to do with a tiny little scale indie production. So...
they had a drone, I think, and they might have had a crane. Yeah, so you can definitely, it's not that production value can't help and enhance a walk and talk.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or anyway.
No, to that same sentiment, we just pitched for our UBC. Well, I just got news that my thesis film is going to be made for UBC.
Congratulations. Yay.
Thank you so much. But coming from, like, producer mind, I always make sure, like, I already had my cost selected. I already had spoken to locations. I already, you know, had an idea of how I'm actually going to make this film and what my team is. I know for DTF, particularly with Crazy Eights, we had our team before we were selected for our, like, the top six. I think when we got into the top 12, it was like, okay, now we need to start building out our team to prepare. We had our core producer, assistant director, writer, obviously. But having those, like, Crazy Eights isn't here to do it for you, right? They're there to support you.
But
a huge part of it is feeling confident. And whether you might be a first-time director or whatever, making sure that you have a team with you or behind you that is confident enough to support you in the process.
Because it is
a harrowing process at
times.
I mean, filmmaking in general is.
it's grueling. I think that's interesting what you are saying, Grace, just in terms of it's not necessarily that Crazy Eights is looking to, you know, check certain boxes in what they're producing, but it really just comes down to the mechanics of getting it produced and whether or not your story is engaging to people. And I think I feel like that is great because that leaves so much open space for creatives and leaves just whatever idea. If you believe in it and you can get behind it and you can figure out the mechanics of making it happen, pitch it and make it happen.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And the other thing too, which is now a real thing, the jurors are often, you know, like often what I mention to them is, please, if you can, leave a note.
Mm-hmm.
We're not looking for or expecting, you know, like extensive coverage from you guys, you know, like
shot by shot.
Exactly. It's not analysis. It's not like that. Right. But, you know, the initial submission through Film Freeway requires a 3-minute pitch video and a 3-page sample of the script of the project that you're pitching.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so
only a 3-page sample.
Yes. Because for a film that would have a runtime of, I say on average, maybe like 8 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If the first 3 pages are not engaging.
Oh, yeah. Then it's like...
then it's...
you've lost them.
You've lost them. And this is just the first pass. So that's just to get to the quarterfinal stage. That's just to get to top 40. Once you're top 40, you get to pitch live to a completely separate jury.
I can imagine also having to read an entire script is...
it can be...
it would be a lot comparing to when you're reading hundreds of applications rather than the first 3 pages.
Yeah.
It can be.
I'd be curious to know how many applications do you guys typically get in a cycle?
In a cycle, I think the max was upwards of 200. This was like maybe about 4 or 5 years ago.
Okay.
And last year we had 120.
Okay.
The year before that we had 150.
Wow.
So it's a bit cyclical. Like it kind of, you know, I think maybe sometimes it depends on what's happening in the business as well.
Right. Yeah.
What time people have, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, like usually well over 100.
Yeah. Wow.
Is what we typically get. And so
it's a lot of scripts.
It's a lot of scripts and it's a lot of pitch videos.
Yeah.
Because you're not just, as anyone who has pre-screened or done any programming for a festival knows, you know, you're not just watching the content. Mm-hmm. You also have to evaluate it.
Think
and then if you leave
it.
A note, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So sorry. So where I was going with this is, every step of the process now, we try to provide some sort of feedback, some kind of value for you as a creative person who is going through this process with us. So say you submit, maybe you don't make top 40. You will still get juror notes.
That's
feedback of some kind.
Beautiful, yeah.
If you go proceed to top 40, you pitch for 5 minutes, jurors ask you questions for 5 minutes, maybe you don't get to top 12, the semifinal stage. If you don't, the jury might have notes for you.
Yeah.
You get to the top 12. You go through a full day with your story editor,
right?
With a professional story editor, and then you get a table read of the draft that comes out of that, and then you go through another one or two drafts before you submit a final draft that the live pitch jury will then evaluate against your live pitch. And then that helps them make the final decision to get you to top 6. So where I was going with this is many people who do not get produced through us produce themselves anyway.
Right.
Or they apply to BC Arts Council. They get funding.
But they've had the support.
They do
the
MAM.
Feedback.
Yeah. Or something else. And they make it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, like we try to provide you with...
they're still getting something out of the pitching process.
That's what we're, so now that's the goal as well, is to try and, because we know, you know, like, no news is often good news, but, you know, like.
Yeah.
Notes are helpful too.
That's what I'm saying.
Notes are preferable even.
I'd be so curious to know. We heard from a independent filmmaker on a panel that we got to attend at the Vancouver Queer Film Festival, and she was talking about submitting for funding, but, you know, similarly in submitting for a program like this, she was talking about the value in repeatedly submitting, even if you're not being chosen. Like, would you say that there's still for filmmakers that have applied, you know, first year don't get selected, or, you know, their film doesn't make it into the, maybe past the first quarter round, you know, is there value to keep doing that, would you say? Keep going after it year after year?
I would say that there definitely is. Mm-hmm. And similar to what you've just described, the experience you've just described of having listened to this person on this panel, I was just having a conversation with another filmmaker, mm-hmm. who they got the DGC Greenlight, for example, you know, like, yeah, award. It's an award that helps you make a short film.
Yeah.
Great.
That kind of thing. Yeah. And, you know, stuff like that. And that person had also sat on juries and things. Mm. And they were like, yeah, you know, we actually pitched twice to Greenlight the first year that we did
with
it.
With the same project.
You know what? I don't know if it was the same project or not. But what they were getting to is that all of the times that they had pitched, even if they failed, quote unquote failed, they learned something from it. Mm. Yeah, like, and even if you don't literally get feedback and notes on the pitch, the very fact that you're going through that process,
you learn so much through the writing the application, looking at what they're looking for. You're like, oh, okay, I should probably tailor my answer to this, or even just learning about different funding bodies and different different festivals to apply to. Yeah.
Would you say that there's any kind of, like, I mean, I'm not sure. I'd be curious to know, like, and I'm not sure if this is a statistic that you know, but maybe the most number of times someone has applied to Crazy Eights. But I wonder if there's an element of name recognition if you're like, oh, this is, you know, here's this person's
person
script
again.
Like, they're back for another round, you know? I mean, I guess if there's a change maybe in
juries
and who's viewing the films or the scripts.
Yes. Short answer, yes. And I'm just going to elaborate on that. Even for exhibition, mm-hmm. like a film festival, and this is something that I actually know for a fact as well, because having worked, I also am on the board currently of the Short Film Festival, Vancouver Short Film Festival, and I have pre-screen for them as a board member. Like, you know, they're like, is mm-hmm. anyone? Yeah, yeah, you know. And I know for a fact that programming can be a very complex process.
Yeah.
And the thing which I think maybe some people don't give enough credit to is the fact that your product is being evaluated every time against the field for that at that particular time.
Mm, right.
So depends who else applies.
Depends how many.
Yeah.
True.
Apply.
So many variables, you know.
Yeah. If 80% of them are dramas and you happen to be one of those dramas, you know, so you guys get where I'm going with this. So it's not necessarily about the merits of your particular pitch or product or anything in its own right.
But also how it fits in with everything else
yes,
that is
that's
being
right.
received.
Because it's being evaluated against what else is available mm-hmm. at that particular time. Mm. So this is where it can be valuable to learn something.
Yeah.
From what you did this time.
Yeah.
And then maybe try again. Don't necessarily just
send the
exact same thing.
Right.
But tweak it, you know. So your other question, how many times has someone submitted, you know? So I don't know if this is literally the most times, but the film that you talked about, the one about the fecundity with
the green thumb.
I'm so
green
sorry, I can't remember
things.
The name.
It's called Weeds Are Flowers Too.
Aww.
Weeds Are Flowers, Too by Keishio Mamichi. And Kay pitched, I think, 7 times before she...
There you go, guys. Just keep trying.
Consistency, yeah.
I will say before we wrap things
it
up...
The hour goes by
so
fast.
Quickly.
We're
just
out of time
when it comes to pitching, you are, of course, pitching your film. But I think just as much you are pitching yourself as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to the pitch video and the supplementary applications, I think, and maybe you can speak to this as well, it's so important to share why it is important for you to make this film. Who are you to be making this film, and why do people need to hear it right now? I think that is a major element that I don't think is missed, but is really just as important as the script that you are presenting and your previous experience in filmmaking. But why is this film important, and why does it need to be made?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Yes.
We often get asked how to make my pitch video? How do I make my pitch video? Yeah. And I always say, aside from the obvious things, which, you know, slate yourself.
Yeah.
So provide a slate. You know, your name, you know, your role on this project, the name of the project kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, the usual things, log line, you know,
that
kind of thing. Aside from that, in terms of what has gotten produced, anything from a pure Talking Heads video pitch to super complex ones with like sound effects and, you know, like even like enactments of certain scenes. Sometimes people are dressed up as their characters, you know, and any and all kinds of types of pitches have made it through to top six.
Yeah.
But what has been consistent in all of them is exactly what Hannah just said. There's always a clear reason for why they feel they should be the ones to make this project.
Yeah.
And their passion and interest for the project is very often very clear.
Yeah.
And
let,
that
let
really
the passion
helps.
Carry you through.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So
we're I'm so sorry to cut the conversation off. We're out of time. It always goes truly so fast.
Thank you so, Grace, so much, Grace,
just
for joining
thank
us.
Thank you so much for being here. Listeners, enjoy the rest of your day. Don't forget to check us out at FLM Picnic on Instagram. You can find recordings of our episodes online at the website CITR, www.citr.ca/radio/film-picnic.
And if there's, before we sign off, is there's anything that, Grace, you want to plug? Now is the time. If there's anything you want to shout out, any projects coming up? any
we just threw it at you.
Sorry, anything that you want our listeners to follow or look at?
Crazy 8's website is crazy8s.film for more
Beautiful.
Information about the program and about films that have been made, including Hannah's DTF question mark.
Yes.
And submissions for this year's Crazy 8's close on October the 18th. Get
Beautiful.
Them in.
Get them
there.
In,
we'll
you guys.
We'll put this in the episode description.
Okay. Well, we will see you next week on Film Picnic as we debunk the film industry with meaningful conversation
one picnic at a time.